Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Boston's Women in Comedy Festival kicks off tonight in Cambridge, featuring stand-up and workshops through Sunday.
Earlier this week, I chatted with two of the festival headliners, comedians Carol Leifer and Wendy Liebman.
Leifer is a three-time Emmy nominee, recognized for her writing on shows like Seinfeld and Saturday Night Live. She's also rumored to be the inspiration for the character Elaine on Seinfeld.
You know, Jerry thought it would be interesting to have a female character who you had once dated before, because as we all know, if you've dated someone, your friendship is always going to be slightly different. And to that end, I think I was partially the inspiration for Elaine. But look, I like to think I'm a good dancer. I don't push people 50 yards across the room saying, get out. So I think that's where the comparison ends.
That was Carol Leifer. She and Wendy Liebman are now based in Los Angeles, but Liebman got her start here just after graduating from Wellesley.
Well, I took a class at the Cambridge Center for Adult Education in 1984.
Wow.
And yeah, and then I started going on open mic nights around Boston, Stitches, Play It Again Sam's, The Comedy Connection, and then Catch Rising Star.
We interviewed Paula Poundstone on this show not too long ago, and she got her start in Boston around the same time. And her reaction, her memory about that time was that the scene was very, very rough and very blue and very hostile toward female comedians and just really hostile, period. Was that your experience?
She was a few years before I started. She started. And I never had that experience, maybe because I just didn't let that in. I just was stubborn and headstrong, and I never felt that way at all.
Carol, your writing resume is very extensive, but I wonder, which do you prefer, performing or writing?
Well, you know, I really am lucky that in my career I can perform, you know, and write for television, and I love that I can do both because, you know, a lot of times when I go out to do stand-up, and honestly, I bow down to the god of stand-up because, you know, it's how I started and how I got all of my writing came from that. And when I was writing on Seinfeld, there was a period where I stopped doing stand-up, and it became about a little over a year or something. And then the next time I went on stage, the fear came back, which is, as Wendy knows, horrible. Like, you work so hard to become a stand-up and to forge through that the second the fear comes back, I knew I was in trouble. So I vowed at that point to never, ever let my stand-up, you know, it's like a muscle, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So I love doing that. And then I also love, you know, my work writing for television. But what I think the audience would find interesting is it really is a family, especially stand-ups, because not only did we kind of start out together, but there's such a camaraderie from doing the same thing together that you're kind of bonded. Like, literally, when I went to audition night, my first audition night in New York City at a club called The Comic Strip, I went with my college boyfriend, a guy named Paul Reiser. But when we went on to audition, the MC that night was a guy named Jerry Seinfeld, who passed us on the audition. And then when we went over to this club called Catch Rising Star, another bygone club in the Manhattan days, the MC that night was a guy named Larry David, who passed me on the audition. So, you know, we go back with these guys. They're like brothers to me, you know, more even than comedy friends. They're kind of like relatives at this point. So it's a very small but a very lovely community.
Yeah, but they're all guys, the people that you just mentioned. What is the state or what is the nature of women in comedy at this point in 2012?
Well, I mean, I think what's great about it now, as opposed to when I started out, there were so few women doing stand-up that it literally, when club owners would put together a lineup, it would be like, okay, we'll have the singer, then the ventriloquist, then the woman, then the monkey act, then the parrot,
then the person
guy
who flosses his nose.
You know, I mean, it was really that rare. And now, I mean, we're always going to be in the minority of comedy. I mean, that's just a fact. But there are so many women now and so many different styles of humor that I think it's just absolutely refreshing. And to have a festival of just women, I mean, I'm excited to go just to see all these women that I've, you know, never seen before.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And I think the ratio of female to male comedians is the same as the ratio of female to male inmates. Just thought I'd throw that thought out at you.
I feel like we could verify that with a study somehow. But stylistically, sort of what's dominant? I mean, my sense is that female comedy, the dominant strain in it right now is this kind of raunchy comedy as exemplified by Bridesmaids. Am I off base with that?
Well, I think stand-up is different than, say, what's out there in film, per se. And Bridesmaids, I mean, you know, I think that was a really seminal movie in terms of movie comedy because it really proved that not only, you know, the age-old question, are women funny or not? Yeah, I think so. And you know, especially with Bridesmaids, to me, in such a kick-ass funny way with no apologies. But in terms of stand-up, I mean, I think here's the great news about it for women and for anybody is, you know, funny is funny. And whatever style is maybe predominant or out there, what lasts over the long term is what's funny. The only way that you get good as a comedian is if you suck for a long time. I mean, that's the only way to do it. You have to be bad to get good. As there were fewer women in the day, I mean, in my day, Rita Rudner, I came up with her, and women like Rosie O'Donnell and people like that, there's always a feeling of kinship because you know what the person goes through because you're a fellow stand-up comic. I think every comic knows that your agent can always talk to you about a gig, but you always kind of take their advice at arm's length because it's like, buddy, you're not out there telling the jokes. You know, anybody else who's out there telling the jokes, you kind of always have an immediate kind of trust with, don't you think, Wendy?
Absolutely. We do something so bizarre for a living that yes, nobody indeed. Can relate, mm-hmm. even our spouses. I know my husband sometimes talks to the other spouses because they have a similar experience as well,
true.
Being the Army, other person.
Army wives and husbands.
Exactly.
Well, Wendy, your family does make its way into your work. Let's listen to a clip of some of your stand-up.
I can't have children according to my lease. But I think you do get what you need in life sometimes, not in the way that you think, but I'm so blessed because my husband has an adorable 5-year-old mentality. But he has 2 amazing sons from a previous poker game, and they are the loves of my life. They are 12 and 15, I think, and we're really communicating now. They just started saying things to me like, I don't have to listen to you. You're not my mother. You know, because they hear my husband saying that to me and they think it's okay.
You know, considering the recent revelation that monologuist Mike Daisy fabricated much of what he said in his act about Apple factory conditions in China, I think all of us are right now this week wondering to what extent are people who give first-person monologues on stage, comedic or otherwise, talking about things that literally happened to them or making up material?
Well, I think artistic license is freedom to tell the truth or to make something up and not have to reveal which is which. I talk about my brother in my act. He went to NYU in the 80s, and now he's a senior. I don't have a brother, but
okay.
I've created this person. And, I mean, I imagine him, but I don't have to really tell the audience that he's fictitious. Do I? I just did. But I do have 2 stepsons, so that is true. They're a little older than I just said. But, yeah, I think it's our right to make stuff up.
Completely. Well, whatever makes the audience laugh.
Right.
Yeah.
If I could
funny,
just tickle them.
But, Carol, your personal life, your real personal life often takes center stage in your work. At age 40, you had a personal renaissance and began dating a woman. Eventually, mm-hmm. you also adopted a child. I understand your partner turned you into a dog person, and then
did.
You became a vegan.
That's right. Yeah. My partner was, it really just happened so amazingly I went to a charity event, and she was across the way from me. And I thought I'd have my chic, you know, lesbian fling. And here we are, you know, this many years later. Basically what happened was I was 40, divorced, childless, single, and I figured there's got to be one more way to really piss off my mom. So,
did
yeah.
it? Did it piss her off?
You know, everybody has, it's 15 years now that we've been together, so everybody is very, and my partner, Lori, did make me an animal lover. We have 6 rescue dogs, and I'm to the point now, Adam, that I can actually say I feel that in many ways, you know, animals are even better than people. I mean, if you think about this, a dog can lick his privates and yet not feel the need to post it on YouTube. I think that's pretty noble. And then I took the animal thing even one step further, like you said, and I became vegan because I felt that as a Jewish lesbian, I wasn't part of a small enough minority.
Ladies, let's talk a little bit more about writing. Carol, as we mentioned, you've written for all kinds of shows, Seinfeld, Saturday Night Live among them. You were recently nominated for a Writers Guild Award for Modern Family.
We won. Modern Family won. Woo. Yes.
Fantastic. Woo. Uh-huh. Let's listen to a clip from that episode. Let me set this up a bit. This is a conversation between Mitchell and Cam, who are the gay couple. They're discussing their adoption of an Asian child named Lily.
What are you doing?
I'm putting together a little scrapbook of how Lily became ours. You know, her adoption certificate, some pictures of her from her village, all out in the open so she has nothing to be ashamed of. You know, and I'm also going to write a little storybook, you know, something I can read her at bedtime. It's called Two Monkeys and a Panda. She's the panda because she's Asian.
And we're monkeys because...
I can draw monkeys.
Okay.
That's great. I think Modern Family is a phenomenal show. It's so smart. What's it like to work on?
Well, you know, I was lucky enough to have guest written that episode. And when I approached them about writing an episode, I'm just a big a fan as anybody of Modern Family. And my partner and I, having a son who we adopted from Guatemala, we could certainly relate to Mitch and Cam and their adopting Lily. So when I went to them with this real life idea about how when we were deciding how to tell our son about his adoption, we went to a therapist to advise us of making a storybook and telling him about his adoption that way. And that's exactly what we did. And when I went in to pitch that idea, they really responded to that. And I'm glad they did, because so much of good comedy, I think, comes out of real life.
Well, to me, this is the genius of Modern Family, which is that the American family, demographically speaking, has been changing radically over the last couple of decades, and it feels like entertainment has just been really slow to catch up with that fact and also to fully plumb the depths of what these new familial arrangements can offer in terms of comedy. And that's what Modern Family does, and you were the perfect person to do it. And this just is such a great example of that, I feel like.
You know, just a little tidbit about when I went in to pitch the idea, it was about creating a storybook for, you know, our adopted son, but actually staying long enough there to pitch the idea, things get deeper and deeper, and it's all of a sudden the episode also became about a real-life conflict that my partner and I had about whether to hyphenate our son's name,
sure, yeah.
You know, or whose name goes first for the hyphenating, and I literally had to call my partner on the way out of the Fox lot, calling her and going, honey, the pitch went a little deeper than I thought. So brace yourself for one of our real-life conflicts on the air.
You're both headed to Boston. Have you given any thought about what type of material might really work with audiences here?
Well, Wendy, you know, is from
there. I started
there.
Yeah. I started so, there.
Any local,
you know,
color in the act?
What you said earlier about when Paula Poundstone said it was... there was like a violent... Did you say violent?
She said it was hostile.
Hostile. You know, I think the audiences expect a lot, but they also really enjoy being there. And I think that sort of schooled me for being able to perform anywhere.
Carol Leifer and Wendy Liebman, thank you so much. And we'll look forward to seeing you.
Thank you.
Wendy Liebman and Carol Leifer perform this Saturday night at the Women in Comedy Festival in Cambridge. Find out more on our website, radioboston.org.
And that's it for today. But before we go, we've already got some reaction to our conversation earlier with Steve Crosby, head of the Massachusetts Gaming Commission. We asked what requirements you'd like to see built into those coveted casino licenses. And on our website, Pete I wrote, "Why not require the casino properties to mitigate all surrounding communities within a certain distance? We can't afford to do it on the backs of our own property taxes." That's just one idea. Crosby said he's open to all of them, so send us yours at radioboston.org.
Our show is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from theangle@boston.com. Anthony Brooks is back tomorrow. I'm Adam Ragusea.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us then for more Radio Boston.